Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Jose Mori, the CEO of Ad Astra Media. Good afternoon, Jose. How you doing?
Good afternoon, Mark. I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. It's actually early evening where you are, isn't it?
It is. I just got back from a clinical day, so.
Yeah. It's still afternoon here in the West Coast. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Oh, absolutely. So again, my name is Jose Mori. I'm a physician by formal training. I studied medicine at University of South Florida. I did all my postdoc work up in the Northeast. I was in Baltimore for a time, then New York. And then I did my postdoc at the University of Pennsylvania. And it was at Penn that I started really getting into away from clinical work and more into entrepreneurship and biz dev innovation kind of things. I got to work through the Innovation Center there at Penn, which was doing a lot of things, obviously, with the Wharton School, and kind of got bit by that startup business bug. And really, since then, it's really changed the trajectory of my life. I still practice clinically part-time, but the vast majority of my career, almost two decades now, I've been in emerging technology, business development, innovation. I first worked with IBM Watson, was my first big foray into tech. I was a senior medical scientist out of the research lab in Almaden, which is in San Jose. I eventually went from a consultant to working full-time, worked my way up kind of the business ladder there until I was associate VP and associate chief health officer for IBM Watson. Worked across all the AI applications that IBM had within their healthcare division. Then after that, I left IBM and started working as a consultant in various capacities for different projects. I've been an advisor to the NASA iTech project, which is an incubator focused on public-private partnerships to find the solutions to help us colonize Mars and deep space. I've been an advisor to several MIT accelerators, including Solve and IDEAS. I've been an advisor to United Nations, particularly around utilizing machine learning for their World Food Program. I advised the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy last year on their COVID-19 project, which was an artificial intelligence project to expedite COVID research, which has now been turned into a documentary and is being utilized by the New England Journal to do now other research beyond just COVID-19. But I've worked as head of innovation for Elon Musk's Hyperloop project to chief medical officer and chief medical innovation officer for various entities from blockchain to augmented reality to extremophiles. And that's been my technical background. My career has kind of led me now to still work as a consultant for various companies, work a ton of remote, which is obviously what you're passionate about. But that led me to develop my latest entity, which is Ad Astra Media, which is focused on inspiring kids from underserved communities to study STEM and to enter the fields of STEM. So that's really what I'm very passionate about.
Wow, that's a lot. You when do you sleep?
I don't sleep very much. I try earnestly to have good sleep patterns because I know how important it is. So I try to get around 7 hours to 8 hours if I can. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I struggle. But the thing I don't do is the things that I work on. That's what's fun for me. That's my socializing. So I really enjoy what I do. So I'm not going to be going out and, you know, taking up some, you know, tweaking my car or some hobby like that. I'm not going to take up woodworking or anything like that. I really enjoy what I do. I feel what I do inspires my creativity. So it's my social outlet.
Yeah. So tell us what Ad Astra is all about. Tell us what Ad Astra means. You told me, I thought it was really cool. And really what it is you're bringing to these underserved communities.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking. So Ad Astra is Latin. It's something that astronauts tend to say to each other. I've never been an astronaut. I've only been an advisor and a consultant for the agency, but it stands for to the stars. So it's kind of, you know, their call sign to each other of going back to the stars. And that's what we're trying to do. We're taking education and media and combining it into edutainment. And it's always multilingual. We create everything in both Spanish and English and other languages as we partner with other groups, whether it's in Poland or others that we've worked with in the past. And what we focus on doing is creating entertaining content that is both educational to kids from underserved communities. And that's underserved, whether it's ethnicity, whether it's gender, whether it's gender identity, disability, neurodiversity. So all the people that aren't currently in the STEM field, we're trying to inspire them to go into the STEM field. So we create both high tech and low tech content that not only teaches them about STEM, but hopefully inspires them to go into STEM. So we create diverse characters within our content, whether it's in a web comic, whether it's in an animated feature, whether it's in live action, whether it's a book, create characters and media that's representative of these communities so that they can see themselves in these different fields. That whole concept, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And we do both high tech and low tech. So we've done 3D animation, VR, AR work in the past, but we also worked with the Clinton Foundation on things like SMS projects. So creating SMS STEM content that goes directly to Hispanic families for them to be able to learn and to know how to teach their kids science and math within the household. So high tech and low tech to make sure that we're not leaving anyone behind.
Very cool. And do you think that a lot of the reason that these underserved communities don't go into it is because they don't see the role models in these fields?
To a certain degree, absolutely. I've had, I'm originally from Puerto Rico. My father's Dominican, my mom's Puerto Rican. I was born on the island. And I've had the opportunity now throughout my career to be able to go speak to different communities. And oftentimes, if you ask, you don't even have to ask kids, you can ask adults. I mean, right now, if we went through, XYZ person's Instagram, right, who are they following? They tend to follow people like artists or musicians or athletes. Very few people tend to have a scientist that they follow, especially from underserved communities or inner city mm-hmm. communities. And it's just not something that they see themselves as a potential outlet. They see other outlets, whether it be sports or music, mm-hmm. as potential ways for them to elevate themselves throughout life. But something I tell people, it's much easier to create 10,000 nurses or microbiologists or doctors than it is to create 10,000 Michael Jordans or 10,000 LeBron James. It's just, there's limitations to what you can do. And if you can elevate the socioeconomic status of individuals from underserved communities, then a lot of these deserts that tend to be associated with lower socioeconomic status, whether it be digital deserts, healthcare deserts, nutritional deserts, educational deserts, I believe that those things can be ameliorated over time as the socioeconomic status is elevated. And the same thing, these types of jobs, the STEM jobs, are the higher paying income jobs right now and into the future. They're only going to expand. I mean, technology is just evolving exponentially. Mm-hmm. And as those things occur, we also have the issues of things like climate change or pandemics. Those types of jobs tend to be much more resilient to cataclysmic type events. Look what happened with the pandemic. Why did people that are from BIPOC communities tend to get affected more? Well, it's multifaceted, but one of those things is most of those communities tend to have those jobs that have to be out in the field. They mm-hmm. have to be out stocking shelves. They have to be out at restaurants. They have to be transporting logistic things. So those are the jobs that are more affected because you're just exposed. The STEM jobs, the blue collar jobs or the silicon collar jobs, if you listen to some folks, those are the ones that can transition really easy to remote working, which is what the essence of the podcast is about, right? So trying to get people into those jobs that they can remote work without having to be disaffected by other things. That's a big component of it.
Yeah, that's what we're doing now. I'm in a co-located, co-working facility in Santa Clara, California. You're in your office, but you also work from home, I assume, right? And I also work from home every day.
Yeah, I work from home a ton. I mean, both clinical work and my consulting work, a lot of it can be done from home nowadays. I mean, you've seen how telemedicine has just exploded over the pandemic. Obviously, there's been companies from your neck of the woods, the startups that are always at the cutting edge, that have been at the forefront of telemedicine and telehealth. But I think the thing that, in my opinion, you can see a really seismic change or revolution in is when you saw the Blue Crosses and the Blue Shield start offering to cover or even offering the services to telemedicine, these behemoths that hadn't changed. It's very hard to turn those Titanics, those entities started really adopting these things. And I think those are some of the evidence that you can see that this is going to be longstanding change, not just kind of a flash in the pants. But same aspect is from a capitalistic perspective, is the end users. It's one thing when you have the younger generation who's very into technology and doing everything remote to be able to utilize those kinds of services. But when you start seeing people like my parents, the boomer generation, in their mid to late 70s or older, start utilizing these technologies and now start seeing their physicians remotely as opposed to face-to-face, which is not just a technological change for them, but it's really a cultural change for them. When you see those people doing it, then that's more evidence to me that this is really something that's going to be here to stay in some capacity.
Yeah, well, interesting story. A very good friend of mine was the head of oncology at UCSF. And when COVID hit, he was not allowed to go in to the office. And he actually had an intern take an iPad, and that's how he met each of his patients every day.
Yeah.
So he did it for till July, and then he retired. But his whole life he was a clinician, right? He went into the clinic every morning.
Yeah. Now I mean, life is completely different. But life isn't different for people that have to still do physical labor. So trying to elevate those underrepresented communities to go into the fields that allow us to do this, that's kind of one of the ultimate goals about Astro.
Yes, and that's great. And the last number I heard, I think it was, there's a shortage of 1.5 million developers, developers in the world. I mean, at least that it's, people just can't find them, right?
Especially, it's not just software. You think about some of the emerging technologies right now. You think of even machine learning. I mean, machine learning has been around for decades. Yeah. Since Herbeth, coined the phrase back whatever in the mid 1900s. But real world applications of machine learning is still fairly new. We've had the peaks and valleys of AI as they talk about, but the things that have really stuck in the last 10 to 20 years, getting people that understand it from a PhD perspective or a master's perspective is very different from getting people that understand it from a real world commercial viability perspective. Right. So getting people with those skill sets, it's a huge problem, which is why you see a lot of companies popping up trying to fix those things, like deeplearning.ai or Khan Academy or Mark Cuban's AI Foundation. There are Girls That Code. There's tons of nonprofits and even some for-profits that are trying to increase, because it's a huge gap. And then when you think about the things that are even coming down the pipeline after this, whether it's working with digital assistants, people that know how to work and program things like Siri and Alexa and applications for that, quantum computing, the fact that's just around the corner, but realistically, how many quantum computer engineers are you going to be able to hire if you start trying to roll this out? That's the kind of thing that governments and enterprises need to be thinking about to be able to create that pipeline, that K-to-career pipeline. And you got to start early, because if we don't fill the void, there will be another country or that does. So we need to be prepared for that.
Yeah. And do you think that going forward, that because of remote work, it's going to bring it more to the underserved communities, where now they're like, well, I don't have to move to New York, and I don't have to move to San Francisco or Austin or one of these big cities. I can do this remotely. Do you think that is going to help these communities?
Yes and no, because you have to remember that there's still a digital divide, right? So there are a lot of comorbidities, as we mentioned. So underserved communities tend to not have access to things like Wi-Fi or not have access to good broadband. So you still have that issue. I think with the current administration, their new focus on infrastructure, one of the things that they're talking about is increasing broadband. Once you have that, and you're thinking not just inner city, urban, but you also have to think rural, right? Rural communities have the same issues. And it's a socioeconomic issue more than anything else. So once you have everything at a level playing field, and as long as you have the same level of service across that playing field, then I think yes. But until then, no, which is one of the reasons, one of the projects that I mentioned earlier was working with the Clinton Foundation. They've had a project called, in Spanish, called Pequeños y Valiosos. In English, they call it Too Small to Fail. And they have both a live component that they do on Univision, which is it's a collaboration that they started with Univision. But they also have an SMS component. And the reason they have an SMS component is because it's a project that's tailored specifically for either first-generation immigrants or second-generation immigrants, that Spanish is their primary language. So what they do with this SMS, obviously they sign up and they call, kind of like the DNC and the RNC and others who have similar types of applications. You text it and then you get signed up for it. And then you receive messages via SMS, because WhatsApp and other types of applications similar to that are still some of the most advanced modalities that some underrepresented communities have. So until you fix that issue of the digital divide, not everyone can take advantage of this, you know, revolution in telework.
Interesting. And I mean, it sounds like from your, except for your clinical work, it sounds like you've been working remotely for years. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So did COVID have a big effect on you personally, or is it a pretty easy transition for you when everything went to stay in place?
It was a fairly seamless transition, to be honest, but the one caveat is that I've done a lot of speaking throughout my career. And that was one of the things I was doing, you know, thought leadership and speaking. And those things, you know, went kind of by the wayside. The only caveat is then people started transitioning to Zoom meetings, but the large conferences and a lot of other applications came out, not just Zoom. There was Hopin and there's plenty of others that were trying to kind of simulate those large conferences. But a lot of them just decided to not have the conference whatsoever. And others, you know, tried and to see what it was like. So it wasn't that big of a difference for me, besides just the conferences weren't there. And I think most professionals probably saw that as well through CMEs and whatnot, that the most of their conferences, either they did turn it remote, but there was plus or minus of how effective that was, or people just decided to punt until this year, or we'll see potentially next year for some of them.
Hopefully some this year. I think as more people get vaccinated, I think you'll see more of it this year. Even where I live, which is, you know, California, we're 50% capacity now. So it's starting to open up.
Yeah, you're seeing that a lot of places. I mean, Israel is 100% done and they've been open. They just had huge Easter celebration. So you're seeing that in the places that are fully vaccinated. So I see that as well. I don't know if everywhere we'll get, at least in the US, we'll get to the magic number that we want, but I think we're going to get pretty high where it'll be fairly safe towards the end of the year.
Yeah. And I mean, what's your thought on just remote learning, remote work, everything remote going forward now that we've been through this for a little bit over a year?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's here to stay. I think there's going to be hybrids going back. And I think people have seen it. There's still things that are done in person and there's still cultural things even in business that are still going to be beneficial to do in person. You're going to see hybrid transitions. I think you're going to see a lot of startups, a lot of mid-sized companies. This is actually hugely beneficial because, you know, you don't have to explain to people why you have, you know, your CFO is in San Francisco, but your CEO is in Boston and your CTO is in Miami, right? Mm-hmm. Before, when you're doing pitches with a diverse kind of conglomerate of people, you know, your VCs would be saying, well, I don't understand why isn't your core team together? Who's going full time? Well, now you can go full time and not be together. So it helps, you know, those companies. And then companies that used to have mid-stage companies, you know, making, you know, low to mid seven figures, now they have they don't need to have a particular HQ where you have a lot of overhead from rent and utilities and depreciation. So it's beneficial to a lot of those companies. Larger companies, I feel like, also benefit from it to a certain extent. I mean, they've shown productivity increase in certain aspects, especially when they go remote and decrease the number of days. The issues, I feel, are really from the worker side, being able to acclimate and having that normal of where's your barrier, right? Especially when you have a phone that's constantly connected. So we've been already preparing for telework, but now I think it's finding that good work-life balance or equilibrium or harmony, as some people like to say.
Yeah, I mean, it was thrust upon us suddenly. Mm-hmm. So I think we got through it okay. And I think you're right. I think the hybrid model is going to be the model. I think people like both. They like the ability to work from home and, you know, not get up at 6 a.m. and rush in and, you know, sit in traffic for an hour, but they also like that one-on-one, you know, or that feeling of being with their coworkers. So I think you're going to see, I think it's going to be, as time goes on, I think it's going to be a little bit of both.
Yeah. And it depends on your home status too, right? Some people want to get away from their family to be able to work because they can't focus, but other people like to be able to juggle both. They like to be able to have lunch mm-hmm. with their kids or their spouse and not have to, and be able to do those kinds of things. So I think as if companies keep in mind that this is an option, and this is an option, especially going forward, to retain the, you just talked about the huge gap of computer scientists or coders. So when you're trying to go out and hire the best talent or the limited amount of talent out there, you have to be flexible with what you mm-hmm. offer them. And things like this is another option of what you can give people.
Yes, I agree. Well, Jose, I want to thank you for your time today. I'm keeping you from dinner, so I'll let you know that.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and have a great week.
You too, sir.